from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council. I'm filling in for Tony Perkins. Well, a new Rasmussen report poll shows that President Donald Trump's approval rating reached a record 52% amidst the fight against impeachment. In just a moment, I'll talk with Chris Wilson, the CEO of WPA Intelligence, a Republican polling firm, with his analysis. In my second segment, I'll talk about a misguided bill which claims to preserve both religious liberty and LGBT rights. Led by Republican Congressman Chris Stewart of Utah, the Fairness for All Act is hardly fair to Christians. I'll talk in studio with Mary Beth Waddle, Family Research Council's Senior Legislative Assistant, about the bill that sounds fair to all but actually isn't. At the bottom of the hour, it was bad enough that Chick-fil-A caved to the demands of the homosexual activists and stopped funding the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and the Salvation Army because they affirmed a biblical worldview on marriage and sex. But now, J.P. Duffy, Family Research Council's Vice President of Communications, has documented that Chick-fil-A is funding the left-wing charity Covenant House, with ties to homosexual pride parades and drag queen story hours. JP will join me in studio. And at 42 past the hour, a 64-page manifesto detailing the strategies transgender lobbying organizations have used to rapidly gain political power and unheard-of cultural influence also provides insight into how the Western world suddenly finds itself kowtowing to the extreme demands of trans ideology. It's entitled Only Adults: Good Practices in Legal Gender Recognition for Youth. I'll talk with Doug Mainwaring, a journalist with LifeSiteNews.com, about the report itself. As a reminder, follow our podcast online at TonyPerkins.com. There you will find more episode resources, connections to today's guests. Follow Tony on Twitter, if you'd like, at T. Perkins, and me at Sarah P. Perry. Well, a new poll has showed that despite the flap on Capitol Hill and all of the hearings about impeachment, Nancy Pelosi's very demonstrative presentation of the fact that impeachment in the House would move forward, President Donald Trump's approval rating has reached 52% amidst the fight. Rasmussen reports, a pollster that the president frequently cites, said that 52% of likely U.S. voters approve of his job performance, while 47% disapprove. Joining me now with his analysis is Chris Wilson, CEO of WPA Intelligence, a Republican polling firm. Prior to starting WPA in 2004, Chris led research for Weber Shandwick for Fortune 500 companies such as Coca-Cola, American Airlines, Kodak, Wells Fargo, and Boeing. Not too shabby a client list. And in 2016, as the Director of Research, Analysis, and Strategy for the Cruz presidential campaign, Chris is credited for playing a key role in Cruz's triumph in Iowa and helping the Texas senator finish with the most delegates earned by a second-place finisher since Ronald Reagan in 76. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
You bet. Thanks for having me on. Always enjoy being on the show.
So this is a very interesting news story to me. You know, if we are to believe the legacy media, what we hear are the evening news and a lot of the bigger outlets, we are to believe that the nation is crumbling and at the foundation is a president not to be trusted and at the very least is dishonest, not to mention incapable of actually holding the highest office in the country. And yet, Rasmussen Reports shows us that he has a pretty impressive approval rating of 52%. So what does this kind of a job rating on behalf of the president say about what he is doing in light of such seemingly insurmountable odds on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think what you've seen is the Democrats have overplayed their hand with regards to impeachment. It's why you had the hostage video style press conference that Nancy Pelosi gave yesterday, in which she tried to give an explanation as to why they were moving forward with impeachment, despite the fact that Republicans haven't had their witnesses called, called to get the hearings by the Judiciary Committee. And so I think what this is the public, the electorate, is frustrated by the fact that Democrats continue to play partisan politics rather than getting things done. And it is manifesting itself in the best numbers that the president has seen in a very long time. And it's really, it's not just a save, unsave either. I think it's important to point out that numbers around the issue of impeachment have continued to deteriorate. And I'll just to cite one poll, one state, I'm sorry, from the time in which the Democrats began impeachment in Wisconsin, which is a pretty important state, as you know. It's right. One of the reasons why Donald Trump is the White House right now. You've seen opposition to impeachment double. So that's from the time that the hearings began until their most recent survey that's done by Marquette just about a week ago. It's their opposition has doubled. And so that happens while you continue to see the economy hum along. In fact, you know, the jobs reports today are the best ever, the best economy we've had in our lifetime. And it is, and yet the Democrats continue to trot along with what's become really a farce of a hearing. I mean, what happened the other day was just ridiculous with the professor making fun of the president's son. And so, Right. What I believe you're going to see Donald Trump be Democrats continue to really do him a favor in the ham-handed way in which they're handling these hearings.
So to me, it looks like, and I'm guessing to a lot of other individuals who've been watching this, that this is an attempt by the Democrats in the House to get a jump on next year's primaries, because what has arisen up to this point is that this is more a political vendetta, more an attempt to sway undecided or potentially moderate Republican voters than it is actually an attempt to impeach the president, because as we know, the Senate is controlled by the Republicans, and Trump stated recently on Twitter, let's hurry up and get on with it, in so many words, because he understands that the Senate won't actually rule to impeach him. So can they conceivably believe that by trying to get an early jump on elections, by tainting the public perception of this president to plant enough doubt in people's minds, that they will actually sway voters if the numbers indicate they do believe he's doing a good job?
Well, it's a really good question, and no, they don't believe. You're right that there's never been any question as to what was going to happen here in terms of on the Senate side. Now, what is interesting to talk about is what's going on on the House side. I think one of the reasons why you see Pelosi pushing this through, and you're right, part of it is to play to the base, and part of it is to help out in primaries, but I also think there is a real chance that if they continue to move forward, you're going to see additional cracks in Democratic resolve start to slip, or additional cracks start to show themselves. And in fact, you can look at Brenda Lawrence, a Democrat congressman from Michigan, who said publicly what many Democrats are really saying privately, which is she doesn't see the value of taking him out of office. She just wants him censured. So you have 31 vulnerable Democrats in congressional seats that Donald Trump won that are very frightened right now. And they know that this vote on impeachment could be the difference between them winning and losing their seats. And as we get closer and closer to the November 2020 election, they are going to become more and more frightened of a vote. I really believe that is why you see Nancy Pelosi pushing this through now, is because she's very frightened. If she loses those 31 Democrats and the Republicans all vote against it, she loses the vote on impeachment. And that would be catastrophic to her. I mean, she would be voted out as Speaker if that happened. That'd be the equivalent of a complete dismissal of her authority and leadership in a position. So I really think that's why she is pushing this along, not so much for a primary purpose. And you're right, they began this in some sort of a attempt to try and win over moderate voters. But whoever gave her that advice, and that's, as you know, I do a lot of Fox News, and I'm often on with Democrats, and I'll have the private conversation in the green room with Democrats saying, who are absolutely just furious at her for not standing strong against the squad, the AOCs of the world, in her caucus and fighting back on this, because that they are the only ones, those four, that wanted this to move forward. Everybody else in the Democratic caucus and those who have to go out and win campaigns for Democrats did not want this to move forward, and they are really in a frustrated position on it.
So let's take a little bit of a look at the same chronology in the presidency of Barack Obama during this time in his administration, he had a 46% approval rating, which makes the 52% approval rating of President Trump that much more notable, particularly because it's in the midst of an impeachment inquiry, and he has been dealing with a notably hostile media from the start. Yes. Some of the press conferences have evolved to nothing short of shouting matches. So it really is to be commended on behalf of our president that he is doing such a laudable job that even despite supreme opposition, there really is no president in modern history who has faced such an onslaught of criticism from every outlet that he is doing that impressive a job. To pull out a 52% approval rating at this stage when his predecessor had a 46% approval rating and was not subject to overt media hostility and articles of impeachment, it really says something about this president, doesn't it?
Well, I think it does. And I think it also, I think it says that Democrats have overplayed their hand so significantly that is causing people who may not like the president for president's actions, the way he tweets, the way he sometimes handles himself, to take a step back and say, you know, they're just going too far. And candidly, this is what happened to us as Republicans in 1998 when we impeached Bill Clinton, because we got really punished at the ballot box in the midterms after that. And I think that's what they've probably taken. Democrats had a very winnable presidential election for them, despite the fact that we've got, again, the best economy in our lifetimes. And they have made it far more likely that Donald Trump gets reelected by the way they've handled these the impeachment hearings. And I know it's, as the president said at one point, you know, impeachment doesn't look good on a resume, and that's true. But I think it really has caused a refocus on things that matter. And what I mean when I say things that matter is the economy. The fact that there are more jobs available than people looking for work, that we have the lowest levels of African-American and Hispanic and female unemployment in American history, and the middle class wages are up substantially. And so, yeah, you compare that to the situation where Obama was. Now, keep in mind, he had a bad economy about this point in his presidency, and it started to pick up around the first part of 2012, which helped him get reelected. Had he had this type of economy, the numbers might have been different. But you're right. He certainly had a friendly media. I mean, he was under nowhere near the level of scrutiny that President Trump has been under. So, yeah, I think your point is exactly on. And it is remarkable that that the situation has developed as it has. And that's really been the case going back to from the time he came down the escalator in 2015 and declared for president. I don't think anybody would have predicted anything would develop the way it has. Anyone who tries to be a pundit in this day and age is how he gets proven wrong far more often than they're proven correctly.
Well, and I think this is a nation that is looking to accomplish things. This is a president that has made good on the promises that he has established. What a refreshing change from the gridlock in Washington that there is a commander in chief who is willing to actually follow through on things that he says he wants to do. And you did mention as well, Chris, that this is a president who has withstood the fact that Democrats have overplayed their hand. We know The Hill just reported we lost 1 million viewers from day one to day two of the impeachment hearings. So there is something to be said for standing the test of time. Chris Wilson has been my guest today from WPA Intelligence, a Republican polling firm. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, filling in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, we will talk about a bill led by Republican Congressman Chris Stewart of Utah, the Fairness for All bill, but one that's hardly fair to Christians, and you wouldn't believe who else is disagreeing with it. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Claussen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn.
Meadow Pollock was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollock, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most important yet misunderstood issues in America. There's a growing perception that protecting religious liberty is an attempt to lawfully allow bigotry and prejudice. Therefore, Christians need to be able to articulate with greater clarity and persuasiveness why they support religious liberty. Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, is a new publication from Family Research Council that presents biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to engage in the fight to preserve America's first freedom. This publication presents key biblical texts that support a broad understanding of religious freedom and key theological arguments based on those texts. In an increasingly secular world, Christians must understand and advocate for religious liberty. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to Washington Watch on this Friday afternoon. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. As a reminder, and this will matter for this segment, go to TonyPerkins.com. We will have their FRC statement on the bill that we're about to address. And we will also be talking to Mary Beth Waddle, our senior legislative assistant, who is working on an issue brief on precisely this bill. Just today was introduced something that may sound anodyne, benign, and not problematic. In fact, equal at all things, but it is a bill that professes to bring equal protection to both religious liberty and LGBT rights, introduced by Congressman Chris Stewart, Republican from Utah's 2nd Congressional District. The Fairness for All Act is hardly fair for any of us, particularly unfair for Christians. Joining me now is Mary Beth herself. Mary Beth, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Sarah. Great to be here.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the creation of this bill. Chris Stewart, a Republican himself from Utah, what was his thinking and when did this process actually begin? Because it was about 3 years ago that this started.
Correct. This is an idea, a philosophy that we've been sort of chasing down and trying to oppose for a number of years now. I do believe in the good intentions of the congressman, that he does genuinely want to sort of find peace to the firestorm that you see
sure.
now and to truly protect religious liberty. It's just unfortunately this bill falls far short of meeting that goal and doing that.
And it was the Council of Christian Colleges, if I'm right, who sort of led the process of putting the actual legislation together. And my understanding is that they worked with a conservative LGBT organization. So we're kind of looking at a bit of a flawed premise for this bill to begin with.
I agree. CCCU was one of the sponsors, as well as American Unity Fund, which is, you know, as you know, an LGBT organization. And I think that's where a lot of the really poor drafting and things come in on this bill, is because they couldn't truly find a place where they could land. And so they left the waters still very muddy and complicated and still open to litigation and not really resolving anything.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about what the bill claims to do, but what some problems are with it.
So the bill claims to protect both religious liberty and ensure rights for the LGBT-identified individuals. The problem is that any time you elevate sexual orientation and gender identity into a civil rights context, you're going to have various victims. And there's really no way to avoid that because it's different from everything else that we protect in civil rights law because it has to do with feelings and belief systems and actions and behaviors and
Absolutely.
Ideologies as opposed to something that's innately born in you. It's involuntary. It's easily recognizable, you know, all of these kinds of things that really don't tie to an ideology or even to actions or things like that. And so because of that, you really can't avoid harms because everyone already has the equal protections of laws and respect and dignity that the laws afford and allow.
We've talked about this a little bit before, but by creating a special class of protections for LGBT individuals, you're really elevating them to super protected status because we know that religious liberty, one of our first freedoms, obviously enshrined in the Constitution, is a liberty, a freedom that the founders felt so important that they wrote it into our foundational document. So what we're doing now is we are attempting to put on level playing field something that is a completely specious notion, for example, gender identity, on which the science one would have us believe in a progressive camp is still fungible. It's changing. This is an emerging field, which, P.S., it's not.
Not at all.
We're now looking at a centuries-old protected status for religious liberty, something on which the nation was founded, being elevated to the level of what I feel is my gender identity this particular day. That can't possibly pass muster.
Exactly. And when it comes to religious liberty and freedom of speech and these sort of things that are the bedrock of our democracy, it's because they help everyone. They don't just help individuals who are religious, this religion, that religion, because it ensures a freedom to believe and a freedom to speak those beliefs and act in accordance with those beliefs. And that's what is undercut by elevating SOGI because it's saying, no, you have to accept this ideology is required.
Absolutely. It's sort of forced acquiescence, isn't it?
Exactly.
Even though there are carve-outs in Fairness for All language, including that the non-discrimination provisions don't apply to for-profit religious organizations. So they're using the public accommodation framework.
Mm-hmm.
So that's churches, Christian adoption agencies. It doesn't apply to those who are for-profit organizations, but 14 employees or under. So this would protect somebody, for example, like Jack Phillips, wouldn't it?
Jack Phillips, yes. Baronelle Stutzman, no.
Right.
Because Baronelle Stutzman has more than 15 employees. So it essentially says if you want to have religion and maintain your religion in the public square and pursue the American dream of being an entrepreneur – sorry, you're capped at 15 employees because after that, you have to check your religion at the door. And there are a whole host of issues within the adoption and foster care situation that are really detrimental in this bill, even though it attempts to solve those issues.
So what we're looking at here, friends, is a need for you all to call the House. You want to call the congressional hotline because you want to make your voice heard when it comes to the unacceptability of a bill like this. While it may be nice in theory, it may have very sort of benign sounding terminology to it, we really want you to call your congressman, your representative. 202-224-3121 is the congressional switchboard. 202-224-3121. Mary Beth is working on an issue brief on precisely this bill. She wrote our excellent issue brief on the Equality Act, and you'll be able to find both of those online at frc.org. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry filling in for Tony Perkins on this Friday afternoon. Well, it was bad enough that Chick-fil-A caved to left-wing pressure and removing donations from Salvation Army and Chick-fil-A because of a biblical worldview. Our own J.P. Duffy, VP of Communications, has written an op-ed revealing that they were also funding a group that had ties to Drag Queen Story Hour. We'll be right back after this on Washington Watch.
The topic of sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it's something that needs to be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, specifically addresses sexual sin and the susceptibility of those in church leadership. He discusses the contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. The principles found in this publication will instruct leaders in meeting their emotional, relational, and even sexual needs in healthy ways so that there will be less of a foothold for temptation. Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure is a must-read for everyone involved in church ministry. To read the publication and learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard. That's frc.org/safeguard.
Are you a parent of a school-aged child? If so, then you understand that navigating your educational system is one of the biggest challenges facing families across the United States today. Family Research Council's new publication titled The SPLC's Teaching Tolerance, What Parents, Teachers, and Administrators Need to Know, helps parents identify and monitor a specific agenda that is being pushed on their children in public schools. The highly partisan left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the greatest offenders on this front with their program titled Teaching Tolerance. This program is designed to infiltrate schools with radically progressive education resources that undermine Christian values about marriage and family. FRC's brochure outlines the content within the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Project and empowers parents to protect their children against the SPLC's agenda. Learn more at frc.org/teachingtolerance. That's frc.org/teachingtolerance.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC, filling in for Tony. It was bad enough that Chick-fil-A caved to the demands of the homosexual activists and stopped funding charitable stalwarts like the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and the Salvation Army strictly because they affirm a biblical worldview on marriage and sexuality. But now we've learned that Chick-fil-A is funding a left-wing charity called Covenant House that has ties to homosexual pride parades and drag queen story hours. Joining me now is J.P. Duffy, FRC's Vice President of Communications, who just wrote an op-ed for USA Today. That's up on TonyPerkins.com. Chick-fil-A once inspired me to live out my faith in the workplace. Those days are gone. J.P., welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Sarah. It's great to be with you.
So back in 97, your parents sat you down and told you it was time to get a job and specifically encouraged you to apply for Chick-fil-A. Why did they recommend the restaurant?
Well, the first, they knew I needed a job for one thing. But second, they knew that I really did enjoy their food. But even more than that, they knew that this was a company that operated based on biblical values. And that meant a lot to us as a family. I mean, my parents taught us that what we learned on Sunday should carry on into Monday. And they saw that Chick-fil-A was a place where that could happen, where I could learn a little bit about what it means to live out my faith in the world around me. And So I applied and I was hired, and sure enough, my first day I saw right there the purpose statement where it says to give glory to God by being a faithful steward to all that's entrusted to us. And when I read that, I was so impressed, and my boss just, you know, started having a conversation about it. And that was the first of many such conversations and over the next 3 years in my time at Chick-fil-A.
So you had to have been incredibly disappointed to find out that Chick-fil-A had not only dropped the Salvation Army and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, but after Ryan Bomberger of the Radiance Foundation dug into some tax records, that they were also funding left-wing advocacy groups. Because we've got a short window, tell me some of the heavy hitters.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Bomberger over at Town Hall and the Radiance Foundation did a great job. He did what no one else had done, which is to find out whether Chick-fil-A's words matched you know, their actions, and he found out that they weren't. He found out that they were funding, of course, we already knew that they were funding the Covenant House, as you had mentioned, but we found out that they were funding some other pro-abortion organizations like the YWCA, the New Leaders Council, that bills itself as a hub of progressive millennial thought, the PACE Center for Girls, which is another pro-abortion organization, that they were systematically dropping Christian organizations and replacing them with these leftist organizations. And, of course, the most shocking of them all was the Southern Poverty Law Center, as you know well.
Absolutely. That is an organization that we actually endured physical violence from because of our support of Chick-fil-A and its pro-biblical marriage stance. So very discouraging, I think, for all of us here. But tell me specifically about Covenant House, because it sounds to me like this is an excellent charity providing homelessness services for individuals who are hard up for housing, shelter, food. But what do we know about them that's really hard for those of us in the conservative community to swallow?
Well, I just remember the moment that Chick-fil-A broadcast and made this big announcement about Covenant House, I did a quick search, and immediately all across their website, there were all these LGBT inclusion initiatives. They were requiring LGBT assessments at every one of their facilities. Across their website, there were various images of gay pride floats and banners and T-shirts, and even recognized on other LGBT sites as a national funder of LGBT causes. So it was immediate that this, what was going on here, what Chick-fil-A was signaling. And I went to church just a few days later, and someone came up to me and mentioned to me, said, you know, I've heard about all what they're promoting, and, you know, I wonder what else is going on here. You know, even some of these other things in the news, like Drag Queen Story Hour. So I did a quick search right then, and there it was, that Covenant House was in fact listed as a host site, only one of six community spaces in New York City as having hosted one of these story hours.
Oh, and for those of us who are parents, JP, you are, I am as well. Those drag queen story hours are perhaps one of the most sort of discomforting of all of the cultural phenomenons, because it is such a frightening, amoral mashup of what these individuals act as, what they dress as, what they promote themselves to be, and the innocence of children. That, I think, for me, and maybe it's the same for you, I think is probably one of the most problematic of all of Chick-fil-A's donations.
Yes. I mean, and when you look at what these drag queen story hours promote, it truly is shocking. Some of it I can't even say, I won't even say on the air, but I mean, you just look at what they have there. It's just completely unbelievable.
Well, unfortunately, Chick-fil-A Foundation's Rodney Bullard said that we don't want our intent and our work to be encumbered by someone else's politics or cultural war, which is unfortunate because they have already stepped foot into the culture wars by standing fast at one point in history for biblical truth, regardless the cost. And as our Tony Perkins has said, perhaps it is time for another fast food alternative. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here. It's my privilege to sit in for Tony Perkins on this cloudy Friday. Coming up next, a 64-page manifesto detailing the strategies transgender lobbying organizations have used to gain political power and unheard-of influence has just been released. I'll talk with Doug Mainring, a journalist, next.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. You are listening on a Friday afternoon. I'm Sarah Perry, filling in for Tony Perkins. As a reminder, go to TonyPerkins.com for this episode's resources. You'll find JP's op-ed that ran in USA Today about Chick-fil-A and what he discovered about where they were sending their money. You'll also find FRC's statement about the Fairness for All Act and other resources that'll be helpful as you process this information. Well, if you've ever wondered why it feels as if we are walking around in a twilight zone when it comes to the notion of gender identity and the transgender movement, just why things have taken off so fast with an obvious disregard for settled science and common sense, you're not alone. A 64-page manifesto has just been released detailing the strategies transgender lobbying organizations have used to rapidly gain power and unheard-of cultural influence. It provides insight into how the Western world suddenly finds itself kowtowing to extreme demands of the transgender ideology. It's entitled Only Adults: Good Practices in Legal Gender Recognition for Youth. Joining me now with his analysis is Doug Mainwaring, a journalist with LifeSiteNews.com. Doug, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sarah.
Doug, you have to feel as though, like I do, we are in a little bit of a Twilight Zone episode because the entire culture seems to have bought hook, line, and sinker the notion that one's gender and their sex is fungible. We are born male and female, XX and XY chromosomal makeups, and yet this cultural zeitgeist seems to have taken off with rocket fuel speed. Are you as surprised as I am at how quickly this has taken place?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think everybody in the Western world has been taken by surprise. And but, you know, I started observing this several years ago. Back in 2009, I co-founded National Capital Tea Party Patriots while I was still living as a gay man, divorced from my wife. And I had just become politically engaged. And I quickly came to understand that all our fiscal issues have dire social issues underlying them. and which compelled me to look at my own life and to reform my ways. And eventually my wife and I put our marriage back together again, our family back together. That was 8 or 9 years ago. And I became a marriage and family and children's rights activist because I could see what was on the horizon with the whole gay marriage movement. And for me, somebody who is on the inside of all of this for so long and whose very first opinion piece ever that I ever wrote was for the Washington Post in 2009 in favor of same-sex marriage, well, I saw very quickly that there were powers working behind the scenes to completely undermine public discourse, and not only that, but legislation. And then look at how same-sex marriage came about. It wasn't through the public's will or the public's embrace of it. It came through the decision of five folks wearing black up there on the Supreme Court.
You know, it's interesting because for those of us who opposed same-sex marriage, because we did believe it would lead to a slippery slope situation, and we have used the argument continuously, we were told we were crazy, and yet now we are seeing this notion, again, the cultural fire taking off and burning everything in its wake of this transgender gender identity fungibility of how you were born versus how you present. So this report to me, I found shocking. And yet at the same time, I realized that they were very coordinated. And the report makes this clear. This 64-page document, Only Adults, Good Practices in Legal Gender Recognition for Youth, really is a step-by-step analysis and a blueprint for how to quash parental authority and scientific concern for these young kids. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole thing, you know, it outlines can I just take a minute to describe what the report is actually?
Please.
It was produced by folks over in Europe, and it was based on a study of 8 countries in Europe that have already passed what these folks see as, you know, very favorable legislation or regulations and so forth. And the whole idea behind it was to identify the best possible strategies, tactics, whatever you want to say, call it, and make them available, you know, create a blueprint for other countries to follow in their footsteps. And the countries that were involved in this report were Belgium, Denmark, France, Ireland, Malta, Norway, Portugal, and the United Kingdom. It's interesting to see, you know, what the practices are that these folks have found to be the most useful. And can I go over just a couple of those?
Please. That was going to be my next question to you, because there were 11 specific techniques that were promoted in this manifesto, and it really does make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
Yeah, and especially when you realize, you know, we've all been suckers for these sort of practices. You know, one of them was let me see. I'm getting to my notes here. Okay, first of all, to demedicalize all talk about transgenderism, because they realized early on that if you talk about what's involved with the medical procedures that transgenders undertake to affirm their perceived or declared gender, it's radical, disturbing stuff. I mean, you're talking about the mutilation of genitalia, and especially with regards to children. I mean, that's
yes,
really frightening stuff. So one of the things that they caution folks about is activists about is that if you're going to pursue you know, more regulations and laws favoring transgenderism, don't talk about the medical stuff. Only speak about rights, you know, a person's right to define themselves and that sort of thing. because that's much easier for the public to swallow.
Well, and one of the other ones that they listed, and we've worked, and Doug, you know this too, you have also talked to individuals like this, individuals with scientific and medical expertise. FRC works closely, for example, with the American College of Pediatricians. They've done a great job of discussing the settled science, how this is abusive to children. And one of the other techniques that they list specifically is get ahead of the media story. Now, that doesn't surprise me at all, but how specifically did they propose getting ahead of the media on the gender identity story?
Well, there are actually two that go hand in hand. It's get ahead of the media story, but also get ahead of the government agenda.
Right.
And I think that comes first. And what they mean by that is these various groups, whether they're actually transgender activist groups or whether they're, you know, progressive attorney groups or whoever, they recommend writing white papers, position papers, well before any of this stuff, measures go up for a vote, you know, even before they're written. You know, they say get to the legislators and their staffs before anything happens. The sooner you can get to them, the better, because by that way you have better control of the narrative and you have control over their thinking process. And pretty much everything is said and done before a measure is introduced and put up for a vote.
Right.
And
right.
And so there's a lot of stealth work going on that's, you know, very cold and calculating that might go on for a period of years before any of this, you know, reaches the public's awareness or consciousness.
Well, we
and
understand.
How problematic that is because they're already making great strides with folks in state houses and, at every level of government and grabbing control of how the arguments are going to be framed before anybody's even ready to react to what's about to be proposed.
Well, it's interesting because something that goes sort of part and parcel with what you talked about, getting out ahead of the media and getting out ahead of the government. One of the sort of pillars of this action plan was avoiding excessive press coverage and exposure, which
right.
is very interesting to me because, again, the light bears out the truth. So to bring the idea of this notion into the public discourse and to openly address what's going on, naturally they would want to avoid excess press coverage.
Yeah. And that's right. And it's because they lose some measure of control if the press is covering these issues. And even though most of the press is on board with this, you know, the media is generally quite progressive in their outlook on life. Still, if it becomes something that escapes into the public square, well, you know, all of a sudden people can raise questions, sound alarms, raise red flags, and they don't want that to happen. They don't want there to be any discussion. They just want to, you know, use what amounts to a tyrannical power to instate these new laws and regulations.
I think probably the most consequential of all of these pillars in this action plan would be the fact that the transgender activist movement relies on the cowardice of the majority, which is pretty convincing and convicting for those of us who are watching this sort of fast motion implosion. Can you sort of explain why cowardice plays such an important role in getting their pressing agenda in front of the right people and passed?
That's always been the case because if they totally rely on that folks will be fearful. They're fearful. You know, they count on people having gays, lesbians, transgenders in their families or in their circle of friends or colleagues at work. And so they want people to think twice and to not say anything because, you know, they don't want to risk friendships. They don't want to you know, create contention in their families or so forth. It's a really powerful tool. I mean, it's no different from what we all experienced in junior high school and high school. You know, you don't want to be the odd man out. And they make sure you know that if you say something that goes against, you know, popular culture, political correctness, that they want you to think people are going to look down on you. They want you to think that you're going to be isolated. And that has the same power with adults and even with congressmen and judges and attorneys as it does with, you know, your typical 15-year-old.
Doug Mainwaring has been my guest today. He is with LifeSite News. For his column, go to LifeSiteNews.com, where he evaluates the report that we've been discussing. I'm going to quote from Madeline Kearns' National Review article when she addressed this movement itself. She wrote, "Is it surprising that activists rely on the ignorance of the media and general public to push their agenda?" She answered her own question with, "Not really, when you consider how obviously dangerous and wrong that agenda is, but there's more to it." And here, listener, we go back to what we were discussing earlier about cowardice. She went on to say, "The success, quote, of a tyrannical majority depends on the cowardice of the rest of us, not on their action, but on our inaction. How many more people must be needlessly hurt before we decide to dismantle activist tricks and techniques, before we decide to tell them, no way, there's no evidence, this isn't safe, this isn't science, and quite frankly, this isn't even plausible. How will this issue magically resolve itself? Our statues, science books, and dictionaries having all been rewritten. The corruption of our social institutions does not occur solely on account of a tyrannical minority. Rather, this minority is aided and abetted by a silent majority who cling to comfort and distraction as others suffer in plain sight. But our excuses are wearing thin. This isn't a fringe issue. This isn't going away by itself. And people in positions of influence having fallen asleep risk waking up from this nightmare in a world they didn't recognize." Doug concludes his piece with the quote that the trans lobby hides its efforts behind a veil and with good reasons. James Kirkup at The Spectator adds to this by saying that the stealth strategies occurred and outlined in the manifesto are the wrong way to go about changing society, and they are doomed to failure when you have an international law firm helping write a lobbying manual for the significant changes they propose for children. It can do nothing but harm. This has been Sarah Perry. I've been sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch on this Friday afternoon. No policy made in the shadows can survive in the sunlight. Be bold today. We'll see you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.